The headline in the Manchester Evening News doesn't read any better. A statue for George Best has been unveiled, but it looks absolutely ridiculous. The newspaper declared the sculptor Tony Curry from the art group Lacaille Bronze is with us this morning. Tony, good morning.
Good morning.
So, Tony, you're always going to get this, isn't it? It's the same, I guess, in the job I do. Some people will like what you do, others won't. It's all very subjective. But there are quite a few people, Tony, saying this looks nothing like him.
Well, I've talked to, and anyone that spoke to me has said it's a cracking likeness. So you take what you like out of
it. How long did you get to do it?
I started this project in 2012, but it's just the past couple of years where we've really put our heads down and get stuck into it to get it finished. You know?
And how do you actually do it? Like, how do you craft something like that? Do you take a picture of George and try to copy it? What picture was it, or what do you do?
We had to work off two-dimensional images from just books, various books and videos and stuff. So it's hard to get an exact likeness of someone when you haven't got them in front of you. You know, it's much easier if it's a living being. But, you know, if you're trying to two-dimensional image into a three-dimensional image without using computers and stuff, it is hard to do, you know, manually.
And what you try to capture in the statue is of where he's dribbling the football, correct?
We've tried to capture a moment in the way that he dribbled the ball and dodged around the players. You know, he was a genius. We're just trying to capture that, you know.
And did you expect it to get this amount of, I guess, criticism?
Oh yeah, you always expect that.
Welcome to Northern Ireland, Tony. All right, listen, thanks for coming on. Thank you very much. This has been discussed on BBC Breakfast this morning. Across the UK, sports presenter Sally Nugent, the anchors Naga Manchetti and John Kay. We're talking about it today.
And finally, we've got another sporting statue to show you. Make up your own minds about this one. It was unveiled in Belfast to celebrate one of Northern Ireland's greatest players. Can you tell who it is yet? It's obviously George Best on what would have been his 73rd birthday. It's had a really mixed reception. No, I don't think it's bad.
It's quite small, isn't it?
Yeah, but it gives... He was quite small. And it gives
look like
the energy...
Oh. It doesn't look like him. I mean, there was that Ronaldo one, wasn't it?
One,
which
yeah.
was just scary.
And there was a Maradona one that was pretty
bad.
Poor.
Yeah.
I think that captures the kind of the essence of him, the energy and the pace.
It doesn't look like him.
Do you not think?
You can't really see his face in that, but yeah.
No.
Do you think he looks like him?
I don't think it looks like him.
Right, so 0-30-30-80-55-55. We've put a picture of the sculpture out on our Twitter feed this morning at Stephen Nolan. It's up on our Facebook page as well, The Real Stephen Nolan, and we're taking your calls on this. This was at the centre of the Nolan Live debate last night with the sports journalist John Laverty, the football fan and commentator Heidi McAlpin, Elaine Crory, the activist, and the Belfast feminist... from the Belfast Feminist Network. Malachy O'Doherty was in there too. Before we hear from them, here's our first call of the day, Harold in Portadown. Morning, Harold.
Hello, Stephen.
Morning.
Well, you're current thin now.
I'm not thin. Don't start all that nonsense, goodness sake. About 4 stone overweight.
Oh, well, here, boy. What about that weird statue? It doesn't even look like him.
Have you seen it?
I've seen a picture of it. Curious, how on earth to put a statue up to a wife beater, a drunkard, and a womanizer, and the rest of us trying to live like as best as honestly as we can?
And one of the most talented footballers in the world ever, born and bred
nonsense.
Here in Northern Ireland. What do you mean nonsense?
Nonsense.
What do you mean nonsense?
He's not the best footballer. Bobby Charlton was better.
He was the best footballer of his time, Harold.
Not at all, Stephen. That's See, all I have
well,
to
no,
say.
No, 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 hold on a moment now.
That's
just
all I have to
well,
say.
Hold
Bye.
On. Now, don't go running away. Don't go running away, Mr. Harold. He's gone. You see, the problem that some people would have is that for these people who are suggesting, oh, he was a drunk, therefore he doesn't deserve to have a statue in his memory. Well, if we recognise alcoholism as an illness, would we say that about any other illness? And this pejorative nature which we, you know, with which we address people who have an alcohol program, a problem, oh, they were a drunk. Well, do you know what? Would you say that about someone that that had a broken foot? Do you recognise alcoholism as an illness or not? 03030 80 55 55. Mervyn, morning, Mervyn.
Hey, Stephen.
Well?
Well, I watched it last night, but George Best was a hero. Like, he was a legend of football and a real icon. Off the field activities wasn't... I mean, I grew up, I wanted to be George Best. I wanted to feel like George Best. It wasn't his off-field activities that made him sort of the man that we all sort of looked up to and as a footballer. My point was that I thought they should have a statue, definitely. But also I thought Harry Gregg was more deserving than anybody of a statue for anybody in the football terms over here.
You know, the obvious discussion we need to have here this morning is that with a statue now in our city, that suggests that George Best was someone to look up to, that he is a role model. So if the next generation are saying to mum and dad or whatever, who was George Best, what did he did?
Mm-hmm.
Critics might say that what those kids are learning is that you can be abusive to women and you're still hailed as a hero in your local area.
But it's football in terms, Stephen. It's football in terms that made George Best what he was. It wasn't as if he had a bad illness, like hundreds and hundreds of other people over here. I don't condemn what he done. Like, I know everybody, you know, as what it was in at that time, but I know it wasn't right.
But listen to what you said. It is what it was at that time. Domestic abuse.
No, I don't mean it in that terms. I mean, it was what he done back then. It's not nothing to be looking up to now. But as a footballer, it should be. I mean, Lionel Messi, Ronaldo, that's all kids talk about nowadays. But Best was the best. It's just he had an illness, and maybe I'm not saying that the illness made him do things, but he was a hero to footballers.
Mervyn, thank you. Let's hear how some of this unfolded then last night with John Laverty, Elaine Crowley, activist from Belfast Feminist Network, Malachy O'Doherty, the commentator, and then we'll take more of your calls.
The story of George Best is a story of tragedy. It's a story of squandered talent. Think of Alex Ferguson, for instance. Alex Ferguson resigned from Manchester United at the age of 72, 1 year younger than George Best would be. So George Best had a lot more in him. If he'd kept his focus on it, if he hadn't lost his way with drink, he is a tragic figure.
It was an illness.
It was an illness. It was. I accept that, absolutely. I'm not making a moral judgment on him, but he didn't grow up. He had no adult maturity about him. He had great skill as a footballer, but he was an alcoholic, and he was, and he had a difficult personality.
When you say, a lot more in him, you judge him because he had an illness called alcoholism?
I'm not making a moral judgment. I'm saying that he could have dealt with his alcoholism. He certainly tried.
Easier said than done.
He said at the end of his life, the last public on record statement that he made was, don't die like me, right? So it would be good if the message that was left was, don't die like me. And a corollary of that is, don't live like me. Because the way he lived was the squandering of a talent and the squandering of a life.
And you said, therefore, there should or should not be a statue?
Well, the statue's there. I wouldn't say take it down, but I would love to see somebody just put the lettering below it, don't die like me, because that is the tragedy of the man's life. It is not a life of heroism. It's not a life to be celebrated as heroic. It's a life to be regarded as a kind of tragic example to a lot of people like him in this country, a lot of people like him in this town. And we have had this huge celebration of George, the repetition of all the silly jokes about, you know, the drink and giving it up for 20 minutes and stuff, you know. And I mean, and a lot of people have gone for that, and it was really, really not helpful at
John?
All. I saw that statue today, and whether you like it or don't like it, it's the celebration of the for me anyway, one of the greatest, if not the greatest footballer who ever lived. I mean, people talk today about Lionel Messi and how good he was. All left foot. George was left foot and right foot. An incredible player, a player I became aware of when I was only 9 years old.
But what about his private life? What about not just Maliki's, not just raising the alcoholism? You know, he was violent towards some women in his life. Yeah. Is that the type of person you put a statue up for?
Well, first of all, nobody's here to defend violence at home, domestic violence, but...
Does that not rule you out?
No, no.
Why not?
Because if you did that, Stephen, there would be an awful lot of statues coming down all around the world.
Well, let's take them down.
You know, like, Stephen, I go past, you know, not long ago, I went past the statue in London, for instance, of possibly what people believe is the greatest Briton of all time, Winston Churchill. Now, Winston Churchill, we all know, was a misogynist. He was a racist. He was a drunkard. And he was terrible towards women. Are we going to bring that statue down?
Elaine?
Let's take them all down. I mean, in all seriousness, the argument that it doesn't disqualify you... And let's bear in mind, this statue didn't go up 50 or 60 years ago after a great war. This statue is of a footballer. It doesn't matter if he's good with his left foot, his right foot, or, you know, he can fly. Ultimately, he's a footballer. He hasn't saved anybody's life. He has irreparably damaged some people's lives. And I don't think there's any good reason to put a statue up to a person who has done that. And this is not just about George Best. It's about anybody that applies to.
Heidi?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure how many people's lives he's irreparably damaged. And secondly, as a football fan and somebody who goes to the Northern Ireland Games and was at
some
George...
Some of the women he was violent with.
Well, these are women who also still bear his name, his two ex-wives, and were at his funeral. So, you know, there's a whole other discussion to be had about that. What I want to say about it is that he has been depicted in footballing form at Windsor Park, which is the home of football.
Sorry, it took me a couple of seconds. One second. Because a woman has the name of one of their former husbands,
they
there's
were both
no judgment.
At his funeral as well.
They were. So you're saying that they forgave him. Why shouldn't everyone else?
Well, but listen, I really don't want to go to. I mean,
yeah,
I appreciate this is the argument.
Yeah.
This is the crux of the discussion. But I do believe, and even Maliki himself said that there should be a statue there. He is the most famous footballer of in Northern Ireland.
And is he a good role model?
Arguably, he was a good role model on the pitch. He was a good role model on
it's
the pitch.
I think we can all be sophisticated enough to acknowledge, like, let's
and
be honest.
And his story is very well documented, so there are no secrets about George Best. Don't forget, when he became famous, he was the first Beckham. He was the first person to have to navigate his way through fame whenever nobody was famous.
There's more than football going on here, and there's always more than football. Whether it's Messi or Ronaldo or whoever else, when certain things come out about their character, their behaviour, the effect they've had on other human beings, real-life human beings who may not be famous, who may not be well-known and may not be wealthy and may not be very good with both feet, but they are real human beings and they have had to live with what that person has done to them. I think it is, no matter how good you are at a sport, at music, at whatever else, that should not be swept under the carpet because they're skilled.
I'm going to come into the audience. Go ahead, sir, on the edge. Yeah, go ahead.
I agree with what John says, sir. He definitely deserves to be accoladed today on his birthday. He deserves to be credited today.
And the lady here in the edge. Yes, go ahead. Yep.
If his statue is in, like, very close proximity to our national stadium, would we not, as a nation, much rather have a footballer and a goalkeeper like Harry Gregg, for example, who, during the Munich air disaster, actually, like, took people out of a fiery airplane? Would we not rather celebrate a man who has not been accused of all the things that George Best has been accused of? Would we not rather celebrate someone that is literally known as a hero, that saved Matt Busby and people like Bobby Charlton, for example?
Well, she makes a good point. I started this by saying that George Best, for me, was the best footballer I've ever seen, and that's why the statue's there, because of his ability on the football pitch. I also knew the guy, and he is also the most charismatic man I've ever met. He is also the most disarming man I've ever met. I can understand, because of his disarming nature, why people forgave him so many times.
See, there's damage follows from that, John. And the damage that follows from it is the celebration of the great bucko, you know, the jokes about the alcohol. You know, we've had plays on the stage of the Grand Opera House about, and Alex Higgins is part of the story as well. We make heroes out of people who were drunks, you know, who were ill with addiction, and we celebrate that, and we make jokes about it, and we name an airport after one of them.
But they were legends in their own lifetime.
They were legends
as well.
In the skills that they had. I mean, there were great writers like Dylan Thomas and Brendan Behan, who were great writers, but they were also awful drunks as well. Now, the fact is George Best was a drunk, and he may have been very... I wonder if he was as charismatic sober or in the morning as he was when you met him.
George Best was a very intelligent man as well, and George Best was not interested in politics and division in this country. And there's a George Best statue outside Old Trafford as well. Yeah. And mentioning Harry Gregg, absolutely, there should be a Harry Gregg statue and a Pat Jennings statue, and we could have our Holy Trinity at Windsor Park.
I just wonder, Malachy, how many people will be uneasy with, again, this pejorative notion around they were drunks. Like, we wouldn't say that about someone that had a mental illness in a negative way.
We wouldn't say that about someone that had a physical illness. Do you think he was happy with that?
Very often, alcoholism is an illness, and you can still be a decent, wholesome, good citizen alcoholic.
Very often people in Alcoholics Anonymous will use the language that I've just used. Will say that
they won't say it in the same sentence as suggesting that that's part of the reason why they shouldn't be hailed as a good citizen.
But I'm counteracting what I see as a levity about the drunkenness. A kind of a jizz, it was all just a bit of a laugh, wasn't it? You know, something that George was very good at perpetuating himself, and something which has been picked up in our culture. We do live in a problematic alcoholic culture. And we will look back someday when we've dealt with that at the fact that we made heroes out of people like George Best and Alex Higgins.
Guy here, yes, go ahead.
Stephen, George Best undoubtedly was the best footballer and the best sports star to ever leave these Isles to go across to England. Malachy made a point there about Alex Ferguson. Alex Ferguson was surrounded by people who looked after him. Mm-hmm. He had people, mentless people who looked after him. George Best left this country as a young boy, went over to England and was on his own. Mm-hmm. He had nobody to look after him, he had nobody to take care of him, and struggled. And if you remember, he actually came home.
That's right.
And Matt Busby had to beg him to come back over to Manchester United. We have a terrible habit in this country of putting people down whenever they're at the top of their sport. I'm not defending what George Best did. George Best did some awful things. But George Best had an illness. Yeah. And back in the day, he had nobody to help him.
He did have an illness, and that was what ultimately killed him, and that is sad. But I don't think we should conflate that with his history of abuse. He defended abusive actions towards partners, not just in his own terms, but defending Paul Gascoigne's behaviour as well. Not on the basis of, I can't help it, I'm drunk. Not on the basis of anything.
There's no statue to Paul Gascoigne.
And I hope there won't be. But his defence was, we all slap our wives up. I know I do.
That's not what George Best said.
Absolutely. I believe the exact words were regarding Paul Gascoigne being arrested for abusing his wife was something like slapping. Who doesn't slap their wife? I know I do. And that was on television. It's
I cannot
in the
imagine for a second that George Best would ever condone that type of behaviour against any person, male or female.
He carried out that behaviour, and I'm afraid if you look, I saw it today.
And you showed a clip in your montage at the start of George Best on Wogan, and I remember watching that live and thinking that poor man, you know, Terry Wogan, whoever talking in his ear should have said, cut this interview now and get him off. It was horrible. It was painful
that night.
To watch.
They knew long before he got on
the green room.
What state he was in. It should never have happened. It was a disgrace what happened to him that time.
Well, it is an interesting point. The chap in the audience, I didn't get your name, sorry, makes about how George had a troubled youth and how he couldn't take it at first in Manchester and how he came home and how he wasn't as cosseted and looked after as he should have been as a young fella. And it may be that many things like the strain of the expectations on him all contributed to seeking the
consolation. What I will say to you...
Can I just hear the blue shirt? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, happy George Pez put Northern Ireland football on the map, because he's brought a lot of people over here and everyone talks about how he played well for Northern Ireland and for Manchester United.
OK, and thank you. And, yeah, at the edge of the glasses, yeah, go ahead.
I was led to believe that the discussion was about a statue of him, not his personal life. He's not the only footballer out there that has done the things that you're saying.
Absolutely.
Or well, what's been said. So he's not here. He's not here. He's not here to defend himself. And as that fella said there, he did put Northern Ireland on the map. He was a fantastic player. Don't hold it against him. Is alcohol abuse, anything like that. He was a skilled player.
Also, talking about him, we might learn from what he did, and he would probably want that so that things like this don't happen again and things are put in place to protect young people going through the ranks
George,
of football.
George, ironically enough, was a trailblazer because of what happened, George, in the late 60s and early 70s, that's what did not happen to Kevin Keegan later on. It's what did not happen to Ryan Giggs later on.
And you'll be fine
because of the mistakes made by George. Yeah. Now, like I say, I knew the guy. And he was an alcoholic from 19 years old. He was an alcoholic for 40 years of his life. He was a shy boy. A lot of people think, you know, he was a charismatic. He was also a very shy boy. The alcohol does not explain what he did. But it's a reason.
Okay.
But it doesn't explain it.
Unfortunately, that's all we have time for. Give my guests a round of applause. And, thank you. Right, so that's part of the show last night. Kicks us off with your reaction, 0-30-30, 80-55-55. Barry in Belfast. Morning, Barry.
Good morning, Stephen.
Morning. What do you think?
Well, I think the reason why people have missed, one of the reasons why the statue is there, it was paid for by his fans, by the people who loved him. I'm of an age where I was lucky enough to have seen him. And, oh, yes, I mean, it was embarrassing to see him on the Wogan show, and he had lots of faults. But, you know, we love him for all his faults. We love him for his memories and the great spine-chilling memories that he gave us that we can now look back in video. And, you know, we can all judge whether he was the greatest. But, OK, he was one of the greatest. But the reason it's there is because we loved him, and we still do.
Is there a responsibility... Is there a responsibility to have a threshold for if you do certain things in life, you will not be hailed as a hero? If I were to say to you, Barry, now, in contemporary Northern Irish society, if someone was abusive to any of their partners, do you think they would be hailed as a hero? And your answer would be no.
I'm not defending George Best. For everything he did, but even his ex-wives loved him. And I think that, you know, we put headstones on graves because we love people, and we visit those graves, we visit the headstones. So that's because we want to be near them, we want to say thank you for all they did, and people go to see George Best's headstone on his grave up at Castlereagh at Roseland. So, you know, this is another way of remembering and saying to him, thank you for all the memories. You know, no one is perfect. He had lots of faults. But overall, we love him because of the memories that he brought to us. And, you know, when you see the videos, unfortunately, they didn't have as much television in those days. But when you see any video with George Best, he was fantastic. You know, and we're so lucky because he played for our team. You know, he played for us. Could you imagine the best footballer in the world playing for your team? He played for ours.
Barry, thank you. Stan next. Morning, Stan.
Morning, Steve.
Morning.
I'd just like to say I moved to Manchester in 1969, and where I lived in Lancaster Road, it cost me 10p for to travel to Old Trafford. So I saw George and he said it, and he was magnificent. He was a terrific player. And for to get into Old Trafford, you had to be there an hour before kickoff.
Wow.
Once he got the ball, you could feel the excitement. The excitement once he got the ball was unbelievable.
Yeah, before you get into Old Trafford, you had to be there an hour before kickoff.
An hour before kickoff.
Whereas these days, most people leave an hour into kickoff after they're boring them stupid.
It was 7 and 6. It cost me 7 and 6. Those seats at the top of the Stratford end, a few seats at that, and that's where I made my way there. There were about 2 o'clock, and got a seat, a nice comfortable seat, and you could sit up and watch Bobby Charlton and Dennis Law. They were they're past their sell by date. They were still good players, but George was the star.
Stan, thank you for calling us today. Patrick's in Port Stewart. Morning, Patrick.
Morning. How you doing, Stephen?
Morning.
Hello, yes. Go ahead, Stephen.
Yeah, go ahead, Patrick. Well, you're talking to me. What would you like to say?
Yeah, no, I remember I was in Oma at the time back in 1993, and I got a phone call from a friend of mine, Marty Woodhead, and I got the camera on me, and he says, would you mind coming out to Silver Birch's Hotel? I've George Best here. And tried to go on out, and George is there with his son Callum. And he was there, he was doing a charity gig for Guide Dogs for the Blind. And so I took photographs, and George was sober at the time, very charming. Took photographs for everybody, and I remember asking Marty what was his fee. So Marty says, no fee. He says he's over here, all I had to do was put him and the young fella up. So I would say that's replicated 1,000 times over the years across the country, all the charity work George did. So I just wanted to put that on record.
And thank you for your call. William in Belfast. Morning, William.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, just a gentle point. Statues are 18th and 19th century stuff. To get into the real world, you can Google up George Best. You can find out what size he is, many goals he scored, everything, how handsome he was, his alcohol thing. This statue thing is just a lot of old nonsense. What do you want?
Do you know when you say that? I was, a few weeks ago, I can't remember where I was. Was it Philadelphia or Pennsylvania I was in? What's the difference? Are they both
just
in the same?
Say you're in the USA.
I was, right, wherever I was, right, wherever I was, somewhere in the States, I went to the Rocky statue. That's Philadelphia, right? And there were tourists from all over the world walking miles to get to that statue.
Well, it's everybody.
And that's this.
Your statue, we wouldn't know why to make it a 23 stone or 15 stone. So you as well put you in Google. The whole thing is out of date, totally out of date. It's gone. It's a bygone day. So just go on to Google, look up any world statement, any sportsman, you'll get everything.
Belfast City Council are going to put up another couple of statues, I'm just being told. Is that right? Of who? We've no idea. Innes McCormick.
A waste of money, Stephen. A waste of money.
Do you think?
Very much so.
Would you?
Very much so.
But these things could be. There's a statement from Belfast City Council which I read last night. That this is an opportunity for tourism, isn't it? It's outside the stadium. It's outside the stadium up there in the Boucher Road.
If Belfast City Council want tourists in here, sort Belfast out. Bring people together.
See, Belfast.
Turn around and get these walls down. Get people working for Belfast together. The community together.
Yeah, your problem is those walls are part of the tourist attraction, of course.
What's that?
Those walls are part of the tourist attraction. They're tourism.
The walls of Jericho.
But they are, aren't they?
You should be turning around, and I know you'll say it's not your ball game, but you should be encouraging people to come together. All you do is look for division. Division, division. There's a lot of people.
It's my fault now.
What's that?
It's my fault now.
You want your figures up. You want the biggest radio show in the country. If you had a gardening programme, nobody would listen to about what roses are like. But once you bring out the poppy or the shamrock or whatever it may be, they'll be all on and, oh, I done this, now this, now.
You're one of them. You are on.
That's your game.
But you are on.
I'm on too because...
You're playing the game.
What's that?
What's that?
I can't hear you.
William, thank you. Morning. Here's Bran in West Belfast. Morning, Bran.
Morning, Steve.
Morning.
Steve, thank God I was privileged to see George Best 3 times. Fantastic. And he had everything. The other thing is I admire him for is he hadn't a political bone in his body. Never heard of him saying anything about the big T, whether he had troubles all during his life. Even after he finished with football, never once did I hear him saying anything political. Well, you had a few sports stars who left their career and finished up being into politics here, for the good or for the bad, I'm not too sure. But Okay, the drink, he had problems there, and what he did was wrong. But I admire him for that. I admire him for his skill, because he had everything. And to me, he is the best player in the world that I've seen.
And do you think that will be a tourist attraction? Do you think all of these people that come from foreign countries to visit Northern Ireland, that will be one of the things they'll go and see?
Oh, yes. Oh, definitely. I mean, I would my grandchildren sometimes I show them photographs of George Best, and I would probably take them over, take a photograph with me, and I'll have the treasure when I go.
Brian, thank you. And Seamus in Banbridge. Morning, Seamus.
Good morning, Stephen.
Morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I've no problem with the statue of George Best, but I think they should put a liver eaten away by what happens if you take to drink. I would have had a drink problem. I'm off the drink now 7 years. And I know if I took a drink now that I'd be back on it. And somebody says I was...
Are you still tempted?
I know if I took one drink now, that'd be it. I'd be back on
it. But do you still feel the urge sometimes?
Sometimes, but drink is... I'm not sure... I'm not even sure if it's an illness. I know some people say it is. I think drink is an answer to problems, other problems. I would have had other problems. But I didn't realise that I was drinking so much. Other people, my daughter used to tell me, Daddy, you're drinking too much. But I become self-confessed, and somebody says, how did you know you're an alcoholic? I says, when you're drinking brandy for your breakfast, you've got a problem.
Is that what you were doing?
Yeah. And now I wouldn't take a drink. I go to the pub. I go down to the local hotel Sunday night for me dinner. And I have the joke is there. The staff know me. I says I'll have a pint of Guinness, but it's a pint of water with bits of orange in it. You know. So you know I can do it. But I think they should point out. Yes, fair enough. He was a good footballer. I remember taking my son. He was only a wee boy at the time. Taking him to Coventry when Manchester United were playing Coventry. I lived in England 35 years. And I run pubs for nearly 25 years, but I don't think I had the big drink problem then, you know.
So what do you think about it? I've been pulling some people up for, you know, talking about their word, not mine, drunks. As someone who's been an alcoholic yourself, how do you feel about that?
Well, I never was referred to as a drunk. I never was referred to, because the problem I had was I could handle drink. You know, I never, people could never say to me...
But don't all alcoholics think that at the beginning, and that's how they get a problem?
Well, when you get a problem, I think you have other problems. I have had other problems on taking a drink, and then you think that cures it, and you wake up the next morning and it doesn't cure it, like, you know yeah. what I mean? And it goes on like that. But I still think they should put, even with the statue, they should put another one up with the liver. Send the message out that this is what happens. You can be famous, but this is what happens when you take to drink.
Well, listen, I said a year ago, I drink once a year.
Yeah.
And I'm terrified of taking a drink now and again, because I'm heart scared that what happened with me with food would happen with me with drink. So I don't touch it, you know. It just terrifies me.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing. You know, like I can laugh and joke about it now. Like the landlord in the hotel where I go down for meals and that, say to me, "Oh, have a pint or whatever." Like, you know, my answer to him is, I'm not going to mention his name because it wouldn't be fair. Maybe on me wouldn't want it, but. I'm driving a E250 coupe Mercedes now, and when the owner of the hotel says, "Oh, James, you're doing well," I says, "You paid for that." He says, "What do you mean I pay?" I says, "For my stop drinking, I put the money aside, and that's what I bought the car with."
Good man. Listen, Seamus, nice to talk to you.